This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. Plus, this week, we're going to take a quick look back at 2020, talk about sales, among other things, vehicle sales. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com and the Coalition for Vehicle Choice. I'm Jack Nerad. With me is co-host Chris Teague. Chris is based in Maine. He writes about cars and trucks for Ford Authority, Forbes, and Driving Today, among others. And he's enduring a pretty good day in Maine today, aren't you, Chris?
Yeah, I'll take it. Above freezing in mid-January cannot be outdone in northern New England.
Yeah, I like that a lot. It's so early as we're doing the recording today that I haven't even looked outside, barely. I can't tell whether it's cloudy or sunny or what. It was still dark as I was preparing for this, so I can't do a Southern California weather report, but I guess we can live without that. What we will like to live with is our special guest, who is Marianne Capo. She is the senior manager of the Chrysler brand product planning. And we're going to get a close-up look at what to expect from the new 2021 Chrysler Pacifica minivan. I talked to her about it at length at a recent event. And it now offers all-wheel drive, among other things. So we will get up close and personal with that really popular minivan from Chrysler. In the car review segment, Chris will give us his opinion on what vehicle, Chris?
The 2021 Dodge Durango SRT.
I'll tell you, those SRT models are terrific as a little preface to what I might say in comment. I just love those things. I had a very fun vehicle, too, kind of on that order in a way. It is not precisely an SUV, kind of halfway between a station wagon and an SUV. It is the Volvo V60 T5 Cross Country. So those are our two road test vehicles. Before we do any of that, though, let's take a look at automotive news. And I think the big news was a year has ended, and auto sales are in, and we can report on that, and particularly what it means to consumers, what it means to people like our listeners out there, not so much industry reporting, but reporting that is of value, we think, to you. One thing to know right off the top is that car sales dropped to their lowest level since the Great Recession, about 2009, 2010. Sales were down 14.6%, which seems like a giant drop. But given what we've gone through in the past year, I think actually that's kind of a positive, because sales were down more than twice that at the halfway mark. So we've been coming back. What's your take on that, Chris?
I agree. I think, you know, when things started becoming apparent that they were going to get bad and probably bad for a long time, you and I talked about this last year, the automakers started issuing frantically promotions and discounts and all sorts of deals on financing. And I think, you know, to a large degree, those helped buoy sales and keep them from cratering as hard as the industry probably thought they were going to.
Right, right. At the halfway mark, sales were down 34%. And a lot of people were predicting that we'd have something like a 10 or 12 million unit sales year. Instead, it's coming in at 14.5, 14.6. It's nothing like the sales year of 2019, when 17 million cars were sold. But there were really good opportunities, buying opportunities for a lot of people. And as a representation of that, the average transaction price, what the typical person paid for the typical new vehicle that they bought, was up pretty significantly. It went up to $38,077, this according to our friends at J.D. Power. That is a stout number as an average price. And it was buoyed, of course, by some incentives. The average incentive on a vehicle was over $4,000 last year, in the last month of last year.
Wow.
So that's pretty amazing. Among the other pieces of news, and pickup truck wars continue. The F-150 continued to hold its position as the most sold vehicle in the United States. It's retained that title for 43 years. This is the 44th year that it has been the best-selling vehicle. Its sales actually fell, but it still retained the title. So that shows you how strong and resilient it is. And one of the reasons sales fell, and this is something that we experienced, and you and I talked about it on an earlier show, is inventory of pickup trucks in particular and some other popular vehicles dropped pretty significantly during the worst of the pandemic.
Yeah, I think for the F-150 specifically, it was kind of a double whammy, right? Because they're the new generation of the pickup just started hitting dealers' lots a month or two ago. And, you know, the sales always dip right before the new model comes out. So they contended with both of those things and still came out on top. But I will say that GM, the GM combined truck sales between GMC and Chevrolet, I think actually topped the F-150 for the first time in something like 15 years. So they're gaining, but the individual brands on their own still can't compete with the F-150 sales.
Yeah, and as you talked about, Chevrolet Silverado slipped into the second place. Second place is among bestsellers overall, and of course then second place in full-size pickup truck sales as well, edging out the Ram 1500 that had enjoyed that title in 2019. So hotly contested in the pickup truck segment, and if you want to buy a pickup truck, this is probably a pretty good time to do that. You have that all-new F-150 that we like a lot. We reviewed it on a very recent show, and it's getting into the market. Certainly the Chevrolet Silverado and Ram 1500 are also great values out there, so things to look at.
Absolutely.
Toyota has two of the best-selling models as well. The RAV4 compact SUV was the best-selling SUV. They sold 430,000 RAV4s last year. That is a very, very robust number. And here's a good comparison, because the best-selling sedan was the Camry, and they sold 294,000 Camrys. That's a big number, but it's dwarfed by the 430,000 RAV4s that were sold.
Yeah, and speaking of new models, Toyota's done a great job expanding the RAV4 with the hybrid models and the RAV4 Prime and the adventure trims that they've come out with. So they've done a good job sort of building it out to appeal to everyone, and it shows.
Right, right. It wasn't a great year for Fiat Chrysler, of course, that owns the Jeep brand and the Chrysler brand and others. They were down 17.4%. Ford Motor Company was down 15%. General Motors was down 11.9%. Toyota was down a similar number. Honda was way off 16.3%. Subaru down 12.6%. And the whopping drop came from Nissan, down 33.2%.
Wow.
It's amazing, too, because I think you would agree with me, Chris, that the new Nissan products are very, very good.
I definitely agree. You know, we talked about the Sentra, I believe, is one of the best values you can get anywhere in terms of technology and features. And I spoke about the new Rogue a couple of months ago. I think they've done an excellent job with the new models. The powertrains are refined. The technology offerings are great. And the value, you know, the Sentra is a good value, like I said, but the Rogue too, for what you get and what you're paying, it's hard to beat. I think that they're kind of stuck in that also ran position against the, you know, Honda CR-V and Toyota RAV4. But hopefully for them, more people will kind of open their eyes and see what these things actually can do and start taking notice, because I'd hate to see, you know, Nissan either fade away or kind of trim their model line back to stay afloat. So hopefully they kind of come around.
Yeah, I mean, the pandemic really struck them, because they were launching both the Sentra and Rogue at the time of the pandemic. And those are two extremely important and high volume vehicles for them. And then here comes this dread disease that keeps people inside and prevents them from buying cars. So it was very, very difficult times for them.
Yep.
In terms of new vehicles, let's switch away from the past and look at the future. There is a hot rumor going around right now in the auto industry that there will be a new version of the Toyota Highlander, the Grand Highlander. One of the things that has sparked that is Toyota has apparently trademarked the name Grand Highlander. And it may be a logical extension. What they have done with the Lexus RX, of course, Lexus, the sister brand of Toyota, they made a longer length RX, a three-row RX. Of course, the Highlander is already a three-row, but a lot of people complain a bit about the third row in the current Highlander. We drove a Highlander recently, about 2,500 miles, and we loved it. So there is that. But a little more space in the third row couldn't hurt. And so I think there's the likelihood that you might see a stretch version of the Highlander called the Grand Highlander within the next year or two.
Yeah, you know, I think with two kids, you've heard me talk at length about fighting for legroom between car seats and front passengers. And I think, you know, I drove a Highlander a couple of weeks ago, the newest 2021 model. I had a limited version where you had the hybrid, I think, a few weeks earlier. And the third row really is only usable by children. And even then, it's only really great for short trips. My 8-year-old daughter, who is just over four and a half feet tall, not even that tall, really, probably 4 feet, found that the seats were too low and that, you know, her knees were crunched into the second row. So a little bit more room back there is not going to hurt anybody. I think it only kind of bolsters the Highlander's family street cred, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that is a very likely addition to the line. And I think it would be an addition as opposed to a replacement of the current Highlander. And so we can look forward to that. Toyota would not confirm that. They don't confirm future products, but maybe they're trying to build a little buzz about that too behind the scenes. So we will see about that. Well, that's it for the news. When we come back, we will be road testing a couple of interesting vehicles, including the hot Dodge Durango SRT for 2021. And I'm going to be talking about the Volvo V60 T5 Cross Country. Maybe perfect for Maine, but I'm here in Southern California. So we'll talk about that when we come back. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you. Thanks so much for being with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nerad with you. And it is road test time here on America on the Road. Of course, we live to drive and drive to live here on America on the Road. We also would like to remind you, if you like the show, please turn on a fellow car person to America on the Road. Just let them know about the show. We'd appreciate that. And Chris, we'd appreciate you telling us all about this Dodge Durango SRT.
Absolutely. And I think I've spoken about the Durango before, you know, even in the more basic trims. So like the Citadel, which is not a basic trim at all, but with the V6 engine or the lower levels with the V6 engine, it's a capable SUV. It's comfortable. It seats plenty of people up to 7 or 8, lots of cargo room. And it's, you know, just a comfortable vehicle, even though it's, you know, probably like a lot of FCA's lineup, a little bit past its prime in terms of being updated, you know, complete overhaul. But the 2021 SRT that I drove, it's got the 392 cubic inch V8. That's a 475 horsepower through an 8-speed transmission to all four wheels. And I got to tell you, and you know, you said these vehicles earlier are a lot of fun. I think the most shocking or most surprising thing to me is just how well these big engines slot into what would otherwise be just sort of a run-of-the-mill V6 SUV. You know, they've done such a good job at tossing these giant V8s in there, tuning the transmission, setting up the infotainment system to manage the performance and the tune. And it just works very well together. And, you know, that's not to mention the fact that, you know, you can rumble your neighbor's house every morning when you start it. It's very loud. So all around, just a very comfortable, very fast SUV. I think it tows up to almost 8,000 pounds. It's running FCA's newest Uconnect 5 infotainment software. This is on a larger, and this is a new feature for the Durango N21, a larger 10.1-inch display. It's optional on lower trims and standard on the top 3 or 4. But that also comes with navigation, as I said, let's say Bluetooth, voice commands, Android Auto, wireless Apple CarPlay, which I tested out this morning. It works very well. HD radio, Sirius XM, and on and on and on. So all the latest technology can be equipped with blind spot monitoring, parking monitors, rear cross-traffic alerts. So all around, very well equipped from a technology standpoint. You do end up paying for that. At the end of the day, this is going to be around a $70,000 SUV. But for the people who want that performance, the sound and the look, I think it's well worth it. And as I said, you know, you can't really beat the implementation of these engines in these vehicles. They've been doing it for a while. They do it well. The Durango, despite being very large, handles itself well on the large tires. The ride remains fairly compliant, even on, you know, rough roads here in Maine in the middle of winter after the plows have torn them up a few times. And I think it looks great too from a subjective standpoint. It's got the big bulge hood and blacked out wheels and trim. So all around, Dodge has done a good job with this. You know, I think if I had any complaints about it, it would be that The black on black on black interior feels a lot like sitting in a cave. It's very dark. And then there's also the sort of, I'll call it a learning curve, although it's more just getting used to the way the vehicle feels. And this has happened in every Durango I've driven. You sit very high and you feel very sort of isolated from the road, which can be a little disconcerting when you're sitting in a car with almost 500 horsepower that makes the sounds that it does. But after a little while, you kind of get the feel for its idiosyncrasies and how it sits, and you get used to that. But at first, it is a little bit odd to be sitting so tall in a vehicle that can go so quickly. So,
well, I think that's happening because you're 6 feet tall, Chris. And, you know, so you're a little disconnected. I, at 5'11", feel very connected in the Durango SRT. I had a chance to drive one in the Carolinas fairly recently, and I just love the vehicle. I think if you're going to tow with a midsize SUV, this is really the only game in town, or certainly the best choice. And I think that's one of the cool things about the SRT, because these are really premium versions of the vehicle, and there's a lot premium about them. At the same time, it's a perfectly capable tow vehicle with a large towing capacity and a three-row vehicle. So you get your driving fun, and you also get all that utility of a three-row midsize SUV.
Absolutely. And, you know, they've even come out, and I'm not sure if you've driven it. I haven't yet. The new Durango with the Hellcat powertrain. So that's going to be even more sort of ridiculous, if you will. But people have raved about that, saying some of the same things that we've been saying here. So
yeah,
goes to Dodge on that.
Well, I did have a chance to drive that, and it is ridiculous in a good way. So very, very fun. So there's that. And what a great choice the Durango is. I think in kind of all versions, but certainly in the SRT version. Well, I was driving a vehicle that has some similarities and then some big differences, of course, from the Durango SRT. First, it's really more of a station wagon. The Volvo V60 Cross Country is one of those rare station wagons these days. It does have a little elevated ground clearance versus the standard V60. I think it's 2.5 inches of additional ground clearance. But I think it's a really good all-around vehicle and a great compromise, I think. I mean, I think you're probably like me, Chris, in that we as car journalists, for some reason, have this weird thing for station wagons. I know I have it. I've had it for years. One of my first cars was a station wagon way back in the day. What's your take on station wagons?
I'm a big fan of the long roof car, so I'm no different than anybody else, and even better if it's brown, I guess. But yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of Volvo wagons and any wagon.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, of course, Volvo goes its own way. It's gone its own way by doing station wagons when others aren't. It also goes its own way in the interior, and I like what it does. Of course, you can get leather seats, but if you don't want leather seats, you can also get plaid cloth seats, which are kind of fun, kind of a different thing. I was always a fan of cloth seats. They're, for one thing, they're not so cold when you sit on them in the winter. And, you know, I kind of like that. This is a station wagon with 23 cubic feet of cargo space behind the second row, so that's a stout amount. You get 51 cubic feet with the second row folded, so very, very useful vehicle. There is one power plant in the V60 Cross Country for this year. It is the a turbocharged 2-liter, 250 horsepower, 258 pound-feet of torque. Kind of the most rational, I think, of the Volvo engines. Volvo gets very, very complicated with the engines that they offer, but I think this T5 is a particularly good one. Good fuel economy, 25 combined fuel economy, 25 miles per gallon combined fuel economy, 22 in the city and 31 on the highway, and it's a nice highway cruiser. This is something that you can put a lot of miles behind you very simply and easily and feel good about it. And also, it's sporting. You have that going for you. It is more like a sedan in terms of handling than it is like an SUV. I should talk about the navigation infotainment system, and I'm kind of two minds about it. Volvo kind of pioneered this big screen in the middle of the dash thing with their Sensus navigation in the XC90 and in the XC60 as well. And there's something about it that is now, I think, a little antiquated. It's kind of harder to operate than a lot of vehicles. And I'm not quite exactly sure why. I think largely it's because of the number of screens you have to go through to get to stuff that you want. It has all the right stuff. I mean, it's a 9-inch touchscreen. The system has 10 speakers, a 220-watt amplifier, voice control, which works actually quite well, so it's all that. You get Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. So a lot to like about this, and also I like the price. It's hard to describe a car that's almost $50,000, the base price is $46,445, as being a bargain, but in this market, this is a very premium station wagon that has, I guess, some SUV capabilities to it. It looks great inside and out, fun to drive. So that's pretty good at under 50K these days.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Volvo, and we've talked about this again before, is, you know, their interiors are spare but not sparse. And they always feel sort of upscale and refined and relaxing even in some ways. But I also couldn't agree more about the Sensus infotainment system. As you said, it has all the stuff is there, but getting to it is a little complicated. Now, that might change if you drive the vehicle for a period of time and kind of build the muscle memory to get what you want. But in practice, learning, there's quite a learning curve there. You know, the gestures to reach the different screens and activate or deactivate different features. I think, you know, they'll probably get to that in the next iteration of the software. But right now, it's a little bit more clunky than some of the other things that are out there, even from sort of budget brands, if you want to call it that, though they're far from it now, like Kia and Hyundai. Their infotainment's so much simpler and easier to use.
Yeah. I'm a fan of having discrete hard buttons for things like heated seats and the heated steering wheel, one of my favorite features of all time, the heated steering wheel. So, and you have to go through a menu or two, at least a screen or two, to get to those on the Volvo. And once you know how to do it, you can get there, but it still takes a little effort versus just clicking a button. And, you know, then your buns get warmed, which I kind of like.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of the heated steering wheel here myself.
Yeah. Well, I get that, you being in Maine and all. So, well, in any case, we had two really good vehicles to review this week, the Dodge Durango SRT, certainly a great three-row sporting SUV, and the V60 Cross Country from Volvo, one of the last remaining station wagons out there, a station wagon with a little bit of SUV mixed in as well. So, Two keepers, certainly, this time around. When we come back, we will be taking your listener questions. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, Jack Nerad with you right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nerad back with you. And we thank you so much for being with us. We really do appreciate you joining us here on America on the Road. It's listener question time. We love to take your listener questions. We try to answer them the best we can, and it's easy to reach us if you want to give us a listener question. Just send it to editor, E-D-I-T-O-R, if I'm not enunciating well, editor@drivingtoday.com, and we'll answer your question on an upcoming show. Chris, I think you've got a listener question for us, don't you?
I do. Someone wrote in asking us, they've been shopping for a car, and they've seen this feature listed in a couple of different places. They want to know what a VDC means in cars. This is VDC, if I didn't enunciate that before. But they're wondering what that stands for, Jack.
Yeah, well, we can answer that. And VDC are three letters that stand for something that is used virtually across the board now. In fact, I think it's mandated on vehicles. And it's electronic stability control in its generic form. Vehicle dynamic control is something that Nissan and Infiniti call their version of electronic stability control. And then Subaru has what they call vehicle dynamics control, plural dynamics rather than dynamic. And then there are all kinds of variations of electronic stability control and electronic stability program. And there's about 20 different names for this. And this actually is quite vexing, causes some pain among the folks, the safety folks, certainly the folks at the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, because you get questions like this, like, what does VDC mean? When if it were all called electronic stability control, everybody would at least grasp what it is. Or, you know, there would be a common name for it, like anti-lock brakes. There aren't 15 names now or 25 names for anti-lock brakes. It's just anti-lock braking systems. But we still have this kind of leftover alphabet soup So you probably want to know, or the listener probably would benefit from knowing, what an electronic stability control system does. Do you want to talk about that a little, Chris? And I can too.
Electronic stability control helps keep the vehicle going in the direction that the driver wants it to. So this is like in a situation when the driver is trying to evade a crash or stop very quickly or swerve out of the way of something. The vehicle has a tendency to want to spin, or, and you know, especially if it's rear-wheel drive. And so the ESC, or the electronic stability control, is there to kind of help stop that or help prevent that and maintain traction when those things are going on.
Right. It doesn't steer the car. I mean, it doesn't take over steering from you. What it does is it provides input. Mainly, it uses the braking system. Sometimes it also uses, changes the way the engine is operating, cuts down engine torque, basically kind of slows the engine in the vernacular to lessen any kind of oversteer or understeer. You know, both of those things are things you don't particularly want. You want the car to go where you're pointing it, or where you hope to be pointing it, as opposed to where it wants to go. One of the things it can typically do is provide braking to a particular wheel, which you as the driver could never do, as talented as you might be. You can't have the left front wheel brake and not have the right front wheel brake, for example, or any of those combinations. So it's a pretty trick little system. What was interesting to me was, as this was being made mandatory, a bunch of safety organizations suggested that this would prevent accidents, a massive number of accidents. And I don't know whether it really has or not. That's something that it would be interesting to go back in time and go, okay, now we've had fewer of these kinds of accidents than we had before. And of course, the accident that is avoided never gets listed, right? I mean, there are no statistics on accidents avoided. There are just statistics on accidents that have happened.
Yeah, I think you could probably point to the fact that vehicles themselves are easier to control than they were 30 years ago too, right? They're not big and boat-like anymore. So I think that could probably play into it too. But as you said, it would be interesting to see the statistics on that.
Right. And you could make the case that things like vehicle stability control, or electronic stability control, or vehicle dynamics control, VDC, aid that. They make bigger vehicles more maneuverable and more controllable, even though you don't know exactly what's happening, because all of this happens mystically behind the scenes. You don't feel it happening. You don't know it's happening. It's just happening.
Yeah, whether it's statistically proven or not, I would like to have it in my car, so I'll take it.
Right. So again, VDC basically equals electronic stability control. The system from Subaru also uses, most Subarus are, of course, all-wheel drive, so it uses the full-time all-wheel drive as the first line of defense against oversteer and understeer. And then the VDC takes further corrective actions, and it deals with where it applies torque and where it applies the brakes. And the Infiniti system, most of their vehicles are, of course, front-wheel drive, operate somewhat differently because it would operate differently on a front drive platform that does not have the benefit of all-wheel drive. But largely, that works by applying braking to a wheel that is losing traction and increasing the torque to wheels that have traction. So that's our chapter and verse on VDC and electronic stability control. That was our listener question for today. Again, if you have a listener question, please send it to us, editor@drivingtoday.com. editor@drivingtoday.com is where you'd send your listener question, and we'll try to answer that on an upcoming show. So with Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you. When we come back, we will be talking with Marianne Capo. She is the Chrysler Product Planning Manager. We're going to be talking about what's new on the Chrysler Pacific minivan for 2021. Just a gentle hint, one of the new things is all-wheel drive. So we'll talk to her about that. So stay with us. Again, with Chris Teague, Jack Nerad with you. And stay with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad with you. We are in the center of Charlotte, North Carolina, with Marianne Capo, who is a manager of product planning for FCA, for Chrysler and Dodge. We're driving minivans today. Today is minivan day.
That's correct.
And tell us what's exciting about the new Pacifica minivan, because there's a lot going on with it.
So we had all these journalists out here in Charlotte, North Carolina, to have the first opportunities to drive our 21 Chrysler Pacifica all-wheel drive. That is one of the things that's new, among many other things. But all-wheel drive, for the first time since 2004, we're introducing all-wheel drive, and you can get it with our industry-exclusive stow-and-go seating and storage.
Yeah. Back when I was just a middle-aged man, that was the last time you had all-wheel drive. And I guess there's been a lot of consumer demand for all-wheel drive in the Pacifica. Talk a bit about that.
Certainly, over the years, our customers have been asking for it. We do very well in the snowbelt states, so in the north, in the Midwest, of course, where I'm from Michigan, where our headquarters is, but also, you know, Chicago, New York, those markets have been asking for it for snow, all-weather capability, and our minivan is the most capable minivan with all-wheel drive, so I'm happy to be able to have that claim.
Yeah, it's very cool to have it today, and we drove them today. Conveniently didn't have snow for us, so I appreciate that.
No, we didn't.
Nice. There was some white stuff along the side of the road. I don't think that was snow, though. But all-wheel drive is a terrific boon, and in this case, it's really seamless for the driver, isn't it?
Yeah, basically, it's an automatic system. It will activate based on weather conditions, so the driver doesn't have to do anything. It will do it all for you. And as a busy mom and dad, that's what you want. You don't want to think about what you need to do. You're thinking about the kids and driving safely on the road.
Exactly. Well, talk a bit about how it senses, because I'm kind of curious about that. It's interesting that there's a bunch of different things that will trigger all-wheel drive.
Well, it's certainly traction. So on the road as you're driving, if there's rain, it's going to activate the system. And it'll activate power depending on where it's needed.
So would it activate it because you've turned on the windshield wipers, or would it activate it because it's sensing wheel slip?
A little bit of everything.
Yeah,
right. It's smart.
Okay.
It's all of that.
So we can tell what temperature it is. All of those kinds of things.
Exactly. It's a real intelligent all-wheel drive system.
Yeah. And typically the vehicle is, of course, front drive. That's what makes it a minivan after all.
Correct.
In the first place.
That's right.
And then it's rear-wheel drive. Yes, when it needs to be.
And it has the ability to have torque sent to 100% of, you know, all four wheels.
You alluded to the stow-and-go seating and the fact that there's some people who would think, well, I can't have all-wheel drive and stow-and-go because it would interrupt. Talk a bit about that.
So certainly, you know, just to be sure that everyone knows what stow-and-go is, it's our seating and storage system. It's our second and third row seats that stow into the floor. Very easy, very seamless to be able to stow them within seconds. So you're able to carry, you know, passengers up to 7 or 8 passengers and stow them into the floor and have a full rear so you can carry cargo within a matter of seconds.
Yeah, clear load floor, and or you have good seating for folks. Absolutely. And that's been a trademark for a long, long time, right?
Correct, and we're the only ones to offer it in the entire industry. There is no other vehicle that does that.
It's kind of interesting that nobody has copied that, because there's so many things you do that have been copied, right?
That's right, and our customers love it. I mean, that's why they keep on coming back.
Right. Well, beyond all-wheel drive, what are some of the other features of the new 2021 Pacifica?
Good, because I was hoping you would ask me that, because we did so much. You know, our team set out to broaden the appeal of the minivan. We were changing the design of it. It's a redesign. It's a more utility vehicle-like, so our styling cues of a utility vehicle have been brought into the minivan. We changed the face of the front. So there's a new face, new LED standard headlamps that don't only have looks, but also there's an improvement for visibility. And then the new grille that's broader, more sportier. And definitely then the upper and lower fascias were changed. That really gives you a whole new face and a more upscale, more sportier look at the same time.
When you talk about styling that's kind of SUV-like, is that what consumers have been demanding, do you think? Or that's just kind of makes sense to you to do? Or, you know, what is that really
intend? Really, both of those things. So, yeah, consumers look at SUVs. We know sales of SUV are the highest ever. People are looking for that styling while they're looking for utility and functionality that you can get in a minivan, but they're looking for that styling too.
Right.
Because you don't necessarily get the same versatility and functionality in a sport utility that you get in a minivan.
Yeah. They are kind of different animals in a way, aren't they? And Chrysler not only invented it, but keep adding stuff, right?
Correct. I mean, we invented the segment, if I can say so. 37
sure.
years ago, we were the pioneers of the segment. And our cadence is we continue to innovate. We have 116 minivan firsts that we're proud of, and we continue to look to add to that. One other thing that we did launch for 2021, we have a new top-of-the-line model. It's called Pinnacle. Sort of speaks for itself that it's
it
at
does,
the top
yeah.
of the lineup. And it has the most luxurious interior in the class. It's beautiful. My design team did a wonderful job. It has unique, exclusive caramel and black interior combination, quilted seats, all these luxury appointments. It has second row lumbar support pillows. That, of course, the kids are going to either sleep on them or they're going to have pillow fights.
Right.
But as a driver, too.
Do they
too,
attach it all? Is there any kind of Velcro or something?
They do not.
Or they're just kind of there?
We call them the second row lumbar support pillows. But certainly as a driver, I'm going to use that behind my back and give me lumbar support, and it adds extra comfort, too.
Right.
So anyone in the vehicle
kind of
can use
pillow,
it.
Throw pillow, right?
It's a throw pillow.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Decorative
nice.
Throw pillow.
And I would say when I looked at the interior and looked at the leather of the seats and stuff, it reminds me of a Ferrari or something like that, a Maserati. I mean, it has that Italian, very upscale look to it, and that's exactly what you were trying for,
right? And all the stitching and all the details really give you that, you know, luxury appointments. Yeah.
Right.
Good.
Right.
I'm glad you noticed.
Yeah. And it struck me, it was interesting to me that the center console is different in the Pinnacle than it is in other levels of the vehicle. Talk a bit about that.
So, as far as the new top-of-the-line model, we also designed a new integrated center console in the first row. It's integrated with the instrument panel, more utility vehicle-like. It has a ton of storage, and it's hidden storage, covered, because our customers tell us they need places to put things, and they don't want anyone to see all their stuff. So certainly it's the most functional center console that we've designed. It has incremental volume storage capacity too. It has an armrest, so it's more comfort too. You get that as you've moved up to the top of the line model that you wouldn't get in any of the other models.
Previously, and maybe in other levels still, you know, the armrest was attached to the seat as opposed to being part of the console.
Correct. And there are other models that are, fall below a Pinnacle. You're going to have armrests that are attached to the seat.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. And the Pinnacle costs about what?
So the Pinnacle is in the $50,000 range.
Okay.
Yeah. Low $50,000 in it. If I can just clarify, so you have the front wheel drive with a hybrid powertrain. And the hybrid is a plug-in hybrid, which has a gasoline engine paired with two electric motors. There's no range anxiety because you always do have that gasoline engine. It gets a total driving range of 500 miles. So you start there, front wheel drive, hybrid combination. You could also then move to a all-wheel drive but gasoline powertrain.
Got it.
Provide those two options for our customers.
Yeah, and with the hybrid, you have some electric-only capability,
correct,
right?
Yeah. 30 miles per gallon on a full charge, all electric range.
So an amazing fuel economy and
correct.
Like you say, range. I think range is something that, you know, we're living in an era of cheap gasoline. We'll see how long that lasts, but certainly having that range, not having to go to the gasoline station all the time, that makes a big difference, doesn't it?
There's a plus. And I know not everyone's aware of this, but it does qualify for the $7,500 federal tax credit that's available. Once you do your tax returns after your purchase, you could get up to $7,500 back on your tax returns. So it really makes it a compelling value proposition if you were to look and consider a hybrid powertrain.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are some of the most exciting features or just useful features of the Pacifica?
So we added a ton of technology features for 2021. We have our new Uconnect 5 system. It's our next gen infotainment system. It allows you to, it works 5 times faster. It allows you to have 6 profile settings. So it knows each passenger or each driver that goes into the vehicle. It'll memorize your seating settings. It'll memorize what music you like. The one best feature, though, is our new FAM cam, interior camera, short for family camera. Because, of course, moms and dads are driving our Chrysler Pacifica. And the FAM cam allows you through our 10.1-inch screen display from the front, allows you to see your rear passengers. You're able to see the second and third row passengers, so where the kids sit. And as a young mom, it allows you to see your infant who's in a rear-facing seat. It'll focus on the child's face. So, of course, when they're crying or whatever's going on back there, if you hear something, it's going to allow you to see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And forget those mirrors that you attach to the windows or to the seats. You do not have to do that anymore.
Right.
You're able to see it right through the display as you're driving. Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things consumers have told you about the minivan over the years, and maybe why they choose a minivan versus an SUV? Because in a lot of ways, it seems like they perform the same function, right?
So I think the number one reason has always been the interior flexibility. So having that ability to carry passengers and then carry cargo.
And get to a flat load floor almost immediately, right?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it's a matter of seconds to stow those seats into the floor, so you do have a full flat rear, so you can carry that 70-inch TV, you know, when you pick it up at Best Buy, or you can go to Home Depot and stack it up with, you know, plywood if you're doing some type of project at home.
Yeah.
It's almost got the ability of what a truck has to be able to carry things.
In a lot of ways, a minivan is more versatile than an SUV, having experienced both. And I guess I do this for a living, but I also have done it as a father.
Okay, yes.
Our children, right? And some of it is just stow and go and being able to make those seats go away, and then they come right back and off you go.
Yeah, you got. I can carry 8 passengers. I can carry a ton of stuff. I mean, that definitely is one of the top purchase reasons. In addition to, you know, we do get kudos on our interior craftsmanship, the interior design. Our interiors are beautiful. You know, if you think about it, we're the family room on wheels, I like to always say. But now with the new Pinnacle, we've upgraded to a living room on wheels.
Yeah, a beautiful living room on wheels. Yeah.
So
at the same time, you have vehicles that are much less expensive, right? I mean, the line stretches pretty long way.
Certainly. So from a minivan perspective, we offer 2 nameplates. So the entry level is called the Chrysler Voyager. And then you move up to the Chrysler Pacifica. The price point starts at $27,000, and then you can range all the way up to $50,000.
And where does Pacifica start?
Pacifica starts at a base price of $35,000.
$35,000,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we've got lots of choices in between that range. So no matter what you're looking for, you can equip the vehicle to you know, something appropriate that you're willing to
and
pay for.
And they're all the same vehicle kind of under the skin, or are they two different?
They're all built at the same plant, same architecture.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Got it. I was wondering if there was like a minivan classic and a new one, as sometimes happens on the truck side. As a product planner, when you go to do a revision of a vehicle that's this important, and this is certainly a very, very important vehicle for FCA, what do you look to do, and how do you feel about it? I mean, there's a lot of weight on you, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we listen to the market, we listen to what our customers are saying, and we look to deliver on the things that they're asking for if we don't have it. That definitely, always doing research and having the voice of the customer in mind. So everything that we've delivered in the 2021, we're answering our customers' desires. And on top of it, we're always looking at doing something new to set a new playing field, take it up a notch, set a new standard, as I like to say, and I think we've done that with our 2021.
It seems like it would be harder and harder, right? I mean, because you've been thinking about this, or your colleagues have been working on this since, what, 84, 83, something like that. And it's gotten incrementally better and better and better and better. And I think there has to be a balancing act between better and cost, right? That's part of it. You could probably have one heck of a minivan if it cost $150,000, but you wouldn't sell very many, right? So talk a bit about the challenges.
Yeah, there's certainly a balance, of course, in... you know, we look to innovate and continue to innovate. Every model year, we want to bring something new. Of course, when you're doing a, you know, mid-cycle action, as we call this 2021, you're going to do a little bit more. We're looking to take care of any, you know, we want to exceed what the competition has, and we want to make our advantages even better than what they are. But there certainly is an investment, and, you know, you got to look at your payoffs.
Let's talk a little bit about seating configurations, right? I mean, tell me what the typical configuration is and what the variations are, because that seems very important to folks, I think.
Certainly, yeah. It's the flexibility you're going to find from the second and third row. I mean, from the first row, you're always going to have the driver and passenger seats. But the second and third row, so either you have the seats upright for passengers, or you have them fully folded to the flat. So from a driver and passenger perspective, though, so I can be sitting in the second row on the driver's side, but then on the passenger side, that seat can be folded into the floor. Mm-hmm. And then if you wanted the third row on that passenger side, also could be folded into the floor. So if you have like a longer type item to carry, let's just say if it's a, I don't know, a surfboard.
Well,
I don't know,
that
might
I'm
be
from
too long.
California, so why not
yeah, a surfboard. You live in California.
Yeah.
But certainly you could do that, have the surfboards back there, while you do have two passengers on the driver's side in the second and third row. Mm-hmm. And then vice versa. You're able to adjust the seats as you need. All of them do fold into the floor, and all of them, of course, have seating if you wanted to have a passenger
right.
in it.
Is there a three passenger third row, or is it?
It's. It is a two split bench seat, 60-40 mm-hmm. split bench seats, but it allows to accommodate for three passengers.
So it's belted for
yeah.
three. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
What else should potential buyers know about the Pacifica minivan before we let you go?
Okay. So we didn't touch on, you know, everybody has a phone, everybody has an iPad, everybody has a device, and while they're all sitting in the vehicle, they need to charge their devices. So we're the first to offer USB Type-Cs, so that's the newest technology, and USBs. So certainly any new iPhones, you're going to have a USB Type-C. So we did include all these new USBs within the Pacifica for 2021. Basically, you can get up to 12 USBs altogether on a high-end Pacifica. So
right.
every single passenger probably can have, you know, at least one, but possibly two devices that are charging. On the lower end, we have six USBs. So the point there is that everyone in the family can be connected, and that's important these days.
Absolutely, it is.
And it's part of our technology story at the end of the day that we keep on adding more and more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, pretty soon there, you wonder where you put them all, right? When can consumers start seeing the vehicle in showrooms for the 2021?
So they'll start arriving to dealerships coming this December, only a few weeks away.
So it's just in time for Christmas. You could wrap one on for Christmas,
you
put
could
a big
give
bow
one
on it, and off you go.
That could be a very nice Christmas gift. I love that idea.
Yeah, I do too. Well, Marianne Capo, thanks so much for being with us. We really do appreciate it. And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. And that was our interview with Marianne Capo. She's the Senior Manager of Chrysler Brand Product Planning, talking about the 2021 Chrysler Pacifica minivan. What a great vehicle. And that premier version of that, the top-end version, the pinnacle version, is just terrific. I really enjoyed driving it with all-wheel drive. So look for that. Perfect for one Chris Teague in Maine, I would imagine. You'll have to get into that vehicle, Chris.
I'm excited to drive it. I can't wait.
Absolutely. And I'm excited to thank you for being with us, Chris. You always do a terrific job, and we appreciate your insights and a little family story along the way. So thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And I will say, if you like what you heard and you want to hear more, go ahead and hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and leave us a review. It'll help us get in front of more people and bring them along for the ride as well.
We'd love to have them along for the ride. We're so glad that you, the listeners, are along for the ride. We do appreciate that. And please check out my book, The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. It is available at Amazon, of course, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and bookstores locally, nationwide, perhaps worldwide. It's out there, so check that out. I think if you like the show, you will like The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. Something we believe in very strongly here on America on the Road. And join us again next week when we'll be giving you more auto information from around the world right here on America on the Road.